Talks. My name
Hey, yo, I got the intro to that. Hey, yo, I'm pulling out of your girlfriend. You know what that means? It's time for another Pillar Field Talks, bitch.
Wow, you just got her, you just made us edgy all of a sudden.
Yeah, just all in one go. You're talking about crude podcasting. So I gotta... We're wrapping some Mark Rose water.
Oh man, we just became the crude podcast on the internet.
Alright, now go for it.
Thanks. Yeah, as always, this is Pillar Field Talks. Thank you for joining us today. Might have some new audience over at MTG Cast. I'm Jared, and joining me today is Chad.
Yo, what's up?
And Perry.
How's it going?
Going great. We are here to talk about some Magic today. And let's go ahead and just do a short intro about who we are, why you should care.
What's up? I'm Chad, and you probably shouldn't care about anything that I had to say. I play, like, I mostly just live in a realm of Commander and a little bit of Standard and little tiny bits of other formats.
Perry?
People like to call me Perry, so I mostly focus on Modern and Legacy. I like playing Elves and Gifts decks.
Great. My name is Jared. I like to brew a lot. I'm into Modern, Commander. Lately I've been dipping the pinky toe into the pond of Tiny Leaders.
Boo.
Just because you lost, like, the two games you've ever played. Don't boo the whole format. You just... come back and try again. As far as where I lay, I'm more about brewing new decks and trying new things than winning. And so I'm sure you'll get like through a lot of my suggestions. I'll try to make them good, but they're a lot of times they might be stuck in a magical Christmas land. Even though I try to criticize myself pretty hard on like the ideas I bring to the table. Let me see. Anything else about yourselves you guys want to say?
I was listening to some of, the older podcasts a little while ago, and, I, like, came to a, like, a revelation, like, I had a personal revelation about myself, like, it's pretty obvious, I'd say, like, just from listening, that I'm sort of a Timmy, like, entirely, and, everything I do really just, like, I'm trying to hark back to, like, when I quit playing the first time around Onslaught Block, which was just, like, a block that was, like, beasts were, like, a viable archetype. Yeah. It was, like, all tribal and shit. And, because I was listening, just, like, we had, like, there was, like, a good portion of time where we were talking about, like, Monastery Mentor, and, like, you guys were going back and forth. It's like, this card seems good. It's like in Modern, maybe it's a little bit better in Legacy. It's got like a 3-cost. 3-cost seems kind of high. And I was just sitting there going like, man, I really want to talk about Sandstep Mastodon right now.
You've been banned from talking about Sandstep Mastodon.
Yeah, I was just, the whole time I was just like, man, I'm just a big fucking idiot.
No, that's fine. That's one of the reasons we love you.
Well, just speaking for myself, I tend to come from a more down-to-earth sort of... I don't really describe myself as a spike, because I do like to win on my own terms, and I like to win with decks that appeal to me in an aesthetic sense.
4-color gifts.
Yeah, like, that mana base is so pretty.
It's but like a rainbow.
These two guys, they'll be... talking about something and it'll just be completely out of base. And I'm gonna try and bring them in a little bit.
I believe that's accurate, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just trying, like, stick the words, like, in commander after everything I say in order to, like, try and explain a bit why I'm excited about stupid shit that I'm excited about, like Sandstep Mastodon.
Yeah, and to make the podcast a little bit more exciting, I've been trying to experiment where I just drink during podcasting to bring up, I don't know if it's bringing up my energy level or if it's just more fun to listen to me slur a little bit, but right now I'm about two cans deep of Rivertown, their All Aboard Anniversary Stout has 7.1% alcohol by volume.
All right, that's a good rate.
Yeah, it is. It's a good rate, but it's no Siege Rhino.
Ooh, that's man, that's a good joke right there. I guess we could use Siege Rhino to segue into our first topic. The Pro Tour was this weekend. That's moderately big news, and as accurately predicted by Perry, Junk or Abzan. Was, like, the absolute most dominant, like, thing on the field in terms of, like, sheer numbers. Something like
28%?
Oh, yeah, like 28% of the field, mm-hmm. playing Siege Rhinos. That's pretty significant.
Another notable thing is that continued into day two meta. The day two meta, it maintained that 28%. Burn went up to, like, 15% on day two. Mm-hmm. So. Kind of a shitty pro tour. If you wanted to see something different.
Yeah, well, that was more or less expected, but, I don't know. In terms of what I saw, I had two things I was kind of excited about, but, Jared, go ahead and hit it real quick.
Oh yeah, as far as it goes with, shitty pro tours, there being two combo decks squaring off against each other in the finals. Yeah.
Was awesome.
Personally, I am all about creature combat and interaction and fields swamped with kill spells and cool creature interactions and,
Well, I mean, Splinter Twin is less of a combo deck than it is just sort of a, like, I don't know, it's not like a real combo deck.
It's not like a real, it's somewhere like kind of stranded between being a combo deck and a, like a tempo list. I feel like, Twin, I don't know. It's really good. Is the thing.
The whole deck is called Splinter Twin because it revolves around that card.
Well, I mean, plenty of games have been won without ever casting a Splinter Twin.
Oh yeah, I'm not gonna negate that. Negate it.
Fuck you.
But I don't know. I guess the reason the finals were really bad was because the Bloom combo dude. Just couldn't.
Oh, Justin Cohen.
Yeah, couldn't deal with the Blood Moon.
Yeah, that's
two games, which was really shitty. Like, you don't want to see one 3-mana permanent that they can't really deal with come down and just sort of like, oh, I guess I'm done playing Magic. But that's what it takes to win. Like, that's why it's in there.
Right. I mean, there's some argument to be made that like your deck should. In order to stack up well against, like, the whole of the field, not have, like, a single card weakness like that. But, like, that's basically impossible to accomplish. You look at anything like Burn, basically straight loses to a Leyline. And, yeah, Blood Moon shuts down the combo deck.
Yeah, and then they've also got Choke, Boil, Karma, all these other things that have been printed but rarely get used. It's just... The Blood Moon is so...
Yeah.
It gets everything. Like, it's like non-basic land. I mean, there's a lot of people who narrow it down and say that, like, it's such a narrow card, but, like, there are so many non-basic lands in Modern that I think that it does sweep wide.
To be fair, Cohen was playing one basic forest in his list.
And what an amazing insight it was to play that basic forest.
Well... You know what? If Cohen was really interested in beating Twin, if he thought it was going to be a thing that he was going to have to beat, he definitely could have made his matchup a lot better just by having, like, three Nature's Claims in the sideboard and having the junk package with, like, Sigarda and Wyrmcoil and all those dudes. He definitely could have hedged towards making his Splinter Twin matchup better, but he decided to, you know, I'm going to deal with the 30% junk in the room and just win every single game that I go up against them. And that's definitely not a bad idea. It just didn't really pan out for me.
Yeah, like, that was a combination of things that kind of led up to that loss. When I was watching, it's just like, that's when he realized, like, the 3 out of 5 for the finals does kind of make some matchups lopsided. Because you look at this particular, now, if just like, if you looked at it as like a best 2 out of 3, Twin still would have won. But like, post-board, Twin had such an advantage over the Bloom combo, cause, it ended up like, good, like, he just had the one Nature's Flame to bring in, and he brings in the Blood Moon, and he had 2 in his board, so it's just like, his matchup just gets a lot worse post-board, and you're playing plus, 4 games to 1.
Yeah, and Twin is already, like, super, really good against, they're really good against other combo decks anyways, just because they have their combo, but they're also packing shit tons of disruption and stuff to fuck with.
Yeah.
Someone just trying to goldfish, so.
Oh yeah, if it's not the combo, it's either fishing for it or getting counter spells or, you know, the random lightning bolt. So, it's a really well built deck. I'm not going to, say that it's not. I enjoy watching it and everything, and I was actually rooting for it against that Bloom deck, because I've played against the Bloom deck. It is miserable.
I personally like the Amulet of Vigor.
Of course you do!
Deck a lot better. That being said, you know, I mean, he also was American, so I kind of had like, a little national pride going on.
Yeah, I was gonna make that joke. I was gonna make that joke, Chad, and you just stole it from me.
I was looking at that as well, but then I looked at the deck he was playing, and I was just like, and then the commentators even compared it to eggs, where it's just kind of like, you do your thing on your side of the table, and their interaction has to be like, I hope you got a counterspell.
Yeah, go ahead.
They featured a lot of games, and there was definitely a lot of interaction, especially if you watch game 3 of the semifinal, where he had to make a lot of choices about what he's getting, and it didn't really lock the game down, so he had to, he had to know when to attack and when to hold back and all that stuff. I think he showed a lot, it's definitely not that straightforward.
That probably is the hardest deck in Modern to navigate, just with what you need and how you get it and everything. That being said, I don't want to see...
I don't know, the Ad Nauseam deck is pretty hard to play in a similar vein.
Yeah, I imagine Storm probably is as well, but, I don't know, when everything's revolving around your lands, it's just, it seems really difficult, and I don't want to see, well, honestly, the main thing I'm concerned about is seeing, like, a flood of it in my local meta. It's not something I want to see, and I'd rather play against Splinter Twin for some reason.
I don't know. Okay, well, 2 things. One, I doubt that we'll see, like, a huge flood of it just because it came in 2nd, I guess.
Yeah, that's why I didn't want it to win. That's what I'm saying. If it came in 1st, everyone would be like, okay, hey, this is the winning deck. Let me go out and buy all these pieces and be really bad at playing it. But still, you don't have to be good at playing it to really win with, like, if you get your pieces in play and you can play the, like, I've played against it, and, like, what killed me multiple times was the Hive Mind combo. That's the most miserable feeling in the world.
It's interesting, like, if you watched, like, cause he and, it was Sam Black, right? Was the other guy playing that deck?
I believe so.
Yeah, okay. Like, between the two of them, I watched, like, a number of games, it was kind of, honestly, it's a little bit rare to see the Hive Mind combo go off. It was like, every game they won was almost always with, just Primetime Smackdown.
Oh yeah, I agree entirely, but my experience, that's all I'm saying, is that my personal experience with it has been the misery of not being able to pay for the upkeep of a spell I was forced to cast.
Right.
So.
That's why you play 5 color.
Yeah, well, honestly, I'm probably like
immune to that, Kevin.
Now, let's get out of, what I want to do is get out of the range of talking about, like, the finals and look at some of the more exciting decks that we saw in the field.
Yeah, I was actually just about to ask if we had anything else we wanted to say about the finals, because I had one more thing and then wanted to segue out of it.
Okay, go for it.
Yeah, I thought the one thing that was interesting, though, is that the deck that did win was, it was just Splinter Twin. Like, you know, red, blue, all in, Splinter Twin. Like, that was the deck, like, the baseline Splinter Twin deck. Which is interesting considering how many, like, variations on Twin we've seen over the past year. Including, this is my segue out, and you guys can take over, whatever, but Makihito Mihara's Grixis Twin deck was awesome and had four copies of Humble Defector.
I think I did see that for a second. I especially appreciated when after they traded back and forth twice of drawing cards, his opponent just kept it and attacked him with it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, at some point you have to, you know, just say enough is enough with the card draw. Not to mention, he did just draw Twin.
Yeah, it's just like, yeah, you just gave me a creature. Good on you. One of the things I was excited to see was Stanislav Slifka playing black-white tokens.
Yeah, he was... Did you see his deck thing?
Yeah.
That is a dude I will never get used to, like, actually listening to talk.
Yeah, I really wish... there are some of those foreign Magic pros that have, like, really good English comprehension and everything, and it's easier to listen to them talk. Stanislav Siska is the number one guy I want to learn to speak English a little bit better so that I can... I want to listen to this man talk about Magic. He's always got interesting ideas. He's really a cool guy when it comes to, like, deck building and, like, how what he brings to the table. It's always a little bit different. But it's the language barrier. It's always getting in the way. I just would like to find, like, a Magic community to just pay for him to, like, take English classes to get a little better.
The thing that I've noticed is, you'll see, like, yeah, I mean, cause, especially with the Pro Tour, like, Wizards is based in the U.S., and they do all their broadcasting in English. But, like, if you saw the post-finals interview, the guy was actually, he was from Spain, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they just had a translator. And I feel like if Stanislav just had a translator, it would be fine. But the fact is, like, he speaks English in, like, kind of a slur. And he's always so excited and, like, jumping around and talking about stuff that, like, you know, it just, like, I'm watching him and, like, he's clearly pointing at an intangible virtue, but all I'm hearing is some kind of, like, French horn music kind of coasting through my brain. I have no idea what he's saying at all. A translator, I feel like, would help that a lot. It would help me kind of concentrate on what.
No, I've seen enough that I've seen enough of the translators do their thing, and it's always just like they get straight to the point and they cut out a lot of the minutia and the little interesting bits that you need to know. That's what it feels like when they're doing the translation, and also when they are doing the translation, when there's a translator involved, the guys interviewing them always keep the questions really short and poignant, and they never get any extra detail. And that's a big problem with the translator as well, is you never really get the deeper, more intricate parts to it.
Poignant?
Yeah, I mean...
Poignant?
I don't think that means what you think it means. Yeah. It's like, poignant is like emotional. And I don't think the commentaries are too emotional.
Yeah, it doesn't mean what I think it means. Get to, like, I thought we meant to, like, to exaggerate the point or point towards it, but no, apparently it means to evoking a keen sense of sadness or regret.
Oh, wow. I've been using that word wrong for my entire life as well, actually.
I hope other people are learning from this, because this is, like, some embarrassing stuff for me right here.
It's literally earlier today, somebody asked me where they could find a Mac machine. And I just gave him this, like, dead-eye despair. I was like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Really? You don't know a Mac machine?
It's like Mac machine. What the fuck
is that? This is a machine that spits out Big Macs, man.
Right, that's what I found out later. And I was like, oh, that's at the McDonald's, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd never
heard of it. So we call it drive-thru.
I literally had to Google Mac machine. It was like, oh, it's an ATM. I was like,
yeah,
this is like, who doesn't just say ATM?
I'm guessing people 35 or older.
This is kind of a younger woman, but I don't know.
Really?
It's clearly just one of my, like, blind spots, I guess. I just had no idea what the hell was going on.
I wonder if Mac machine's like a regional thing. Like, you know, like when you go to Texas, if you order a Coke, they'll ask you what kind.
And, right,
it's
right.
Basically slang for soda there. So, listeners, if you think, if Mac machine's like just what people say in your area, we kind of want to know. Get a hold of us at PillarfieldTalk at Twitter. And, let us know. I'm gonna play up this Twitter thing. I don't know how it works.
I really hope that we have like one, like, tweet. It's like, at Pillarfield Talks, like, they say Mac machine here. And that's the only tweet we ever get.
Wait, you gotta correct that. It's at Pillarfield Talk.
Right, Talks.
We don't have enough spaces for the S.
Anyway.
We break Twitter with our S.
It's true. They would have nothing.
They're really not happy with us for like wanting that S. I put in a special request and nothing. But in any case, other exciting decks that we may have seen in the Pro Tour, like, I don't know. I still want to talk about the black-white tokens and how, I was excited to see him using Bitter Blossom when I took Esper tokens to my one thing. I had some Bitter Blossoms in there. To see like a pro using a build that was inching closer to something that I was building was really exciting. It was sad to see that it wasn't able to take it further, and watching him play the black-white tokens build makes me think that I'm correct for wanting to go Esper tokens and push it a little bit more into the counterspell arrangement, because I think that there's just a lot of things that the best way to deal with them is just to say no when they present them to you. And it's really hard for me to say that, as I love aggro and I don't want to deal with counterspells, but seeing how that deck operates and having played it with counterspells, I think it might just be a good idea. You guys have any input?
Well, I think that, like, I mean, the build, like, the particular build that he brought was, like, an anticipated metagame call that actually turned out to be a pretty good decision. I didn't actually see, honestly, any of his games, all weekend. I don't know if they didn't broadcast them or if I just happened to be out of the room when they were going on. But, I'm not exactly sure what, caused him, like, what he lost out to, but, from my recollection, like, it seemed like it was a pretty solid decision for the weekend and could be a good decision for Modern moving forward. I'm not really sure. There's something, cause, I mean, Black-White Tokens was an old Modern deck, but it seems like it could be better now with kind of a focus on ground pounders in the creature matchups. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, Black-White Tokens just grinds junk and jund and creature decks into the ground, so yeah, I think it's probably a pretty good choice moving forward.
So you don't think it's like lacking anything? Because, like, you know, obviously he didn't make the top 8. And he's, like, a really good player. I like to think that he could navigate his way there with it. But, like, we've seen him come, like, do some good stuff and come short with it before. So is there anything missing from that deck? Or, like, you know, would it benefit from a third color now that we have, like, you know, 10 fetch lands and you can really add without there being too much of a problem? Or even just, as we saw from Jacob Wilson, you have two colors as your main and you give a slight splash.
Well, blue is just really hard to splash.
Agreed. Okay. Yeah.
I think you can deal with pretty much everything with your discard and your Path to Exile and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's one thing I worry about with that deck is that there's just not enough removal in it on a normal basis. The one I play adds more black removal spells, but Path to Exile, like, I don't know, like, when, especially when you're playing against a field that has Splinter Twin, and we're not gonna, there's, within the next 3-4 months, we're gonna see more Splinter Twin than we've ever seen before, probably. I think that only having Path to Exiles is not acceptable.
Well, I think some things you could consider are slaughter packs.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's a pretty good one, because if they try to remand it, it just makes them look pretty silly. I like murderous cut.
Okay, yeah, that's pretty good. You just delve around the one single card that matters in your graveyard, which would be Lingering Souls, and that's like everything else except for your enchantments go into the graveyard. So yeah, that deck's highly disposable when it comes to like cards in the graveyard.
Yep.
Okay. Okay, we'll be done with black-white tokens. Another deck I saw that I was very interested in, I have a preliminary build done, was black-blue fairies. We saw that on camera one time. I was excited to see it. It probably had one of its worst matchups it was against. I would have liked to have seen it against something where it had a little more play. But I was excited to see it on camera nonetheless.
Yeah, it did get kind of rumbled in that game.
Fairies is so dope. Like, I love fairies. But it's so expensive for such a tier 2 deck.
Yeah, that's what I'm finding. Like, I have almost everything together for it, and it wasn't very costly. But that is because I don't have the Cryptic Commands. Like, Cryptic Commands are, I would say, probably like a third of the deck's entire cost.
Well, you also have to run at least 2, if not 3 Vendilion Clicks.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I have none of those, and I've just decided not to acknowledge them.
And did they run Snapcaster?
Oh yeah. Yeah, he might have been running Snapcaster. I also have none of those, and I'm not running any.
And Mistbind Click is like $20 a pop, so.
What? I gotta recheck that. I think I've been picking them up well under what they should have been then.
Well, if you can get them for like $5, then please snag me a set.
Mistbind Clicks are about, $7 right now.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Good, because I don't know how I've managed to restrain myself this long, but Merfolk is a tier 1 deck again, bitches. Kinda. Not really. I actually, I haven't been able to find, I keep wanting to call him Falco. after the Star Fox character, but that's not true. But I haven't been able to find his actual list yet. But I know that he was on blue-white.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't see that coming. Okay.
Yeah, a lot of people splash white, cause it gets you, like, a path out of the board and also white sideboards, which are just amazing.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And there is a little bit of, support for white merfolk and,
I know there's, when I was looking at, briefly, for about half a second, I was looking at, like, merfolk stuff for tiny leaders. I know there's, like, that one merfolk that whenever he becomes tapped, you get, like, a 1-1 merfolk.
Oh, yeah. I don't remember the name of it, but, yeah, that's, it's Adel Lorwyn. Yeah. They're not, I doubt he was running that. I believe he was just running the basic merfolk shell, but with white for, some removal. But, I'll find his list eventually, and I'm sure I'll gush about it at some point. I just love, they kept talking about it, like, the commentators would be like, oh, well, it's crazy, they were seeing, like, a merfolk list. You haven't seen a merfolk list in a long time. Like, who would want to play a merfolk? Fuck you, Rich Hagen. but then, like, the one time they showed it on camera, he was just, like, sitting there with the 3 curse catchers on the field, one card in hand. He played it, it got countered, and then he just lost. Like, it was the saddest 12 seconds of a game I've ever seen.
Yeah, all of the decks that I found interesting had those experiences on camera.
Yeah.
Perry, did you have any deck that you found really interesting during the Pro Tour that, you know, didn't quite make it? Or, yeah, even one that did?
I am a big fan of, in fact, I really think what Tom Ross brought to the Pro Tour with the Pantheon is pretty special. I think it's a great build and it'll probably do well moving forward.
Can you elaborate on what kind of deck it was and, like, some of the innovations that you saw in it?
It's a regular Tom Ross deck where, you know, it's got all the normal components, but it just has the perfect numbers, like the one of Spell Skype and the main, and just, you know, it all feels very cohesive and everything is in its right place.
Okay, well, some of our listeners may not be familiar with Tom Ross or what he brought to the Pro Tour, so can you give me a rundown of the archetype and some of the cards in it?
Oh, it's your fairly standard blue-green effect, which is his main go-to archetype for Eternal formats. It really relies on three different infect creatures. You've got your Glistener Elf, which you can play turn one. You've got your Blighted Agent, which is two mana, but it can't be blocked, which makes it very good in a creature-based format, because it'll just scoot right past the Tarmogoyfs and all the other things. And the third is Blink Moth Nexus, which is very hard to kill. You can't get rid of it with Abrupt Decay, can't get rid of it with Sorcery Speed stuff, so... And then it uses those creatures along with pump spells like Vines of the Vastwood, which helps you pump your creature, and you can use it to give your creature shroud, basically, in order to protect it from in combat or from removal, which is pretty important. Might of Old Crosa, which is very under-costed for how much pump it gives you. And it's got stuff like Noble Hierarch, which, you know, it's good for Exalted. You're usually only attacking for one.
And And Pendlehaven and stuff like that, yeah.
Yeah, and it accelerates your mana, so you can play... You start out with a turn one Noble Hierarch. You can go turn two Blighted Agent, hold up Apostle's Blessing or Vines of the Vastwood for the Blighted Agent, and then turn three you can go... you can go Vines of the Vastwood and Might of Old Crosa for 8 or for 10 total. So that leads to a lot of turn 4 or turn 3 wins.
Mm. Cool. Yeah.
In addition, the Become Immense out of, Cons was actually kind of a clutch addition to that. So I think it is the largest, like, power and toughness boost that they run, isn't it?
Yeah, it's +6/+6.
Yeah, it's ludicrous.
It's pretty good because it makes your late game better. Because if you can't really, if you're like being pinned down by removal and stuff, you can just sort of build up your resources, make sure they don't like get rid of your blink moths, and then when the time's right, you can just, you know, activate your blink moth and then scoop a bunch of cards out of your graveyard and all of a sudden they're looking at instant speed death.
Right.
Now, that's a pretty cool deck, and, you know, one, I don't know. I think that, I would think about running it because initially when Infect first came out, I was all about Infect. I loved it. I thought it was a really cool idea. And then after, so many years of Commander, I know that you shouldn't play Infect. That's what's in my head now is you just shouldn't play it.
Right. That's, Commander's really like a sticky subject on Infect. And like, I remember like having these debates, like among the playgroup, being like, what do we do with Infect? Like, is Infect a 10? Like, we were having these debates despite the fact that literally nobody was even playing it. Like, we were just that scared.
In my first, Commander deck, I just raided my rare folder to make it. And I had, Skittles in there.
Yeah.
And I remember that every time he hit the table, you guys were like, oh, fuck you. Infect deck? You're playing a whole Infect deck? I'm like, it's one card out of my 100. And then I would promptly be stomped by everyone at the table.
Yep.
So, yeah. Like, so it's in my head now that you don't play Infect, even though it's a good modern format decision. And I think it looks exciting. I think it looks cool. It brings me back to my days when I first discovered Infect. I have been taught many lessons about not playing Infect.
I wouldn't be mad about playing Infect in Modern or even in Commander, but I'm different than you guys. So, but I think that Infect in Modern is just so, like, it's a very, very, very skill intensive deck as far as learning like your timing and
yeah, it rewards patience and it rewards repetition and a lot of gameplay and experience.
Yeah, and if you're like a stone cold killer like Tom Ross, you can just sort of read your opponent to figure out what they have.
It's that leather jacket, man.
Yeah, man, he is the suavest.
Dude, yeah, Tom Ross is like my hero.
Yeah, he's really one of my heroes. He's up there, probably like my top five guys I like to watch play Magic.
Dude, and fucking John Finkel was playing that deck too, and like every game they showed him play, like he got beat, and it just always feels so bad because like I love John Finkel, and
well, that's not
like,
true because I saw him win against shit. He beat somebody.
Yeah, I remember him beating, like, they showed at least one win, but he was, they showed him in, like, three different feature matches.
Okay, the one they have listed up right now is him versus Sam Black, and Sam Black was on that Amulet Bloom deck.
Yep.
Now, one deck that I was really excited about.
Wait, hold
about,
on, just one thing.
Yeah.
I've never seen someone who's so good at something be so uncomfortable while doing something. As John Finkel is playing Magic. You know, he's just like, he's sweating, he's wiping his forehead, he's holding his head in his hands. He looks absolutely miserable.
It always kills me when he does the thing where he puts both hands on top of his head, and he's just like, yeah.
It looks like he's just like having the worst time of his life.
I wonder if Wizards has his family held hostage every Pro Tour, and they're like, you're not getting out, Finkel.
That's why you never see him like during the regular season, but he shows up on the Pro Tours because he's like,
oh my God,
failing him to do it.
Much.
It's just like, I have to believe there's a point where it's just kind of like he's the Keith or Sutherland of Magic. He's just like, we got your family. We're going to play some Magic and we're going to get some of our old viewership back.
That which was taken.
That will be the John Finkel movie title.
Right. Oh man, that would be such a great segue into the casting Magic cards, but we'll save that for later. I do have one other deck that I was pretty excited about on the Pro Tour. And, that was Martin Mueller's draft deck. Did anybody catch that?
No, I'm just starting to go back through and rewatch the draft right now. Like, it came so early in the day that I was like, this weekend, I rediscovered drinking on the weekend because I finally had one off.
Right.
And I was rarely awake and, like, really paying attention at 9:30.
Yeah. But, yeah, Martin Mueller, and forgive me if I'm pronouncing his name wrong, it has an umlaut in it, played against somebody whose last name I know I'm not going to be able to pronounce right. Zvi is his first name.
Oh, Zvi Moshowitz.
Yeah, Moshowitz. I highly recommend checking that game out. I think it was round 11.
Dude, I definitely will because I just love... There's something about Zvi Moshowitz I just like. Like, not only is he a brewer, he has that crazy name, but he does, like, some of the... I can't remember whether it's... Yeah, it's Channel Fireball's intro stuff where, like, they make all the dumb puns about, like, you know, selling your cards to them and getting some cool stuff back.
Right.
But, like, he has the quintessential geek voice, and there's something about it.
I love it.
I love it to death because it's genuine. It's not made up. It is genuinely the geek voice.
It kills me. It's so painful. Well, I can't deal.
Sneeze voice aside, Mueller's draft deck was like, it was red, green, double strike, and pump spells. Like,
cool.
He won in that match, like, he went 2-1, and, he lost the first game, and then on both the second and third games, he was dealing upwards of 25 to 26 damage to win.
Jeez.
Like, with one attack. It was the most insane thing ever. It was just really amusing to watch.
Yeah, I want to watch that. I honestly will go back and take a look at that. Mm-hmm.
But that's really all I had for the Pro Tour, personally.
Well, I have one other deck I wanted to bring up that I was in love with for the Pro Tour, and it's one that actually made it to the top 8. Jacob Wilson.
Oh, right. The
yeah, what he said is that he took a pod deck and he took out the pods and he stuffed in some Wiltleaf Lieges and that's what he had. But to look at it, I think it's a little more like a Hate Bears deck that got smashed in with a little bit of pod. I really like this. I really wanted it to go the distance, and it's really unfortunate the matchup he got, that he couldn't go further in the top eight, because I thought his deck, to me, it just looked gorgeous, because it was just so much green-white aggro, and that's right where I like to set in my life.
So you mean the deck I was telling you about that I was doing last week, and the one that you shit on last week?
What I remember you saying was that you wanted to play Glare of the Subdual with Lingering Souls, and that was it.
No, I even mentioned this show.
He did. I can vouch for it.
I said Wiltleaf Lieges, and I mean, I put in Brimazes as well, but it's basically almost card for card what I was playing a week before the Pro Tour.
I guess I was just shitting on Glare the Subdual, because all the creatures that are in green and white, I tend to like a whole lot. So I don't know what shit I would have been giving you for, like, the creature base,
He would have come in first if he was running Glare of Subdual.
Well, I don't think it probably wouldn't have helped in that matchup that he had for top eight, but he would have absolutely crushed any junk deck with Glare of Subdual.
It's just true.
Well, his thing was already geared toward beating junk decks, and he did. Like, that's...
Well, he lost to Eric Froelich, and the main problem with the deck is, if you fall behind on board, you are absolutely done. So, Glare of Subdual allows you to control their side of the board while getting in your own damage with your Finks and your Rhinos and your Lieges and stuff. It's a good card, man. It's a great card.
Yeah, I'm in support of it, obviously. I think though, you were obviously defending, what you said the other week, I believe, when you told me you were like, he's basically running the deck that I suggested, but he replaced the glares with some good cards.
I just love the creature base that includes Loxodon Smiter, Voice of Resurgence, I was surprised to see Kitchen Finks in there, but I guess when you can go ahead and just straight off guess that some percentage of the field is going to be burn automatically, there's probably a larger percent of the field because it's like reliable and, you know, good to go to, especially after the shakeup, that Kitchen Finks and the Siege Rhino package are pretty good to keep your life, above theirs and also get, creatures that in a sense replace themselves. Also running Lingering Souls where you get four creatures out of one card. So just like the pseudo card advantage that these create were like really good. And I like, you know, I just didn't see Kitchen Finks coming back.
Well, I've been playing the deck online, because I decided to get into it. I'm kind of glad I did because I think moving forward, like, Wiltleaf Lieges are going to get really expensive and stuff.
Oh,
like
that. They already have, my friend.
Oh, they have?
Yeah, like they're like up around 20 a piece right now, and I can only imagine that they're probably gonna go up about like a dollar or two more probably.
Are they $20 online?
They're all bought out on eBay because I checked, and the TCG player mid is about $20.
Oh geez, so yeah, yeah, they're already I guess that really paid expensive. Off for me. I didn't really think about speculating for this Pro Tour, but.
Well, I'm talking about paper. Like, online prices are always a good bit different.
Yeah, I'm gonna just take a look, because people are way behind the times all the time, so.
Oh! Shit.
Yeah, it went up $5.
Yeah, I went and checked the price, when, Jacob Wilson was on, doing his match, and, the price on the TCG player mid was like, $19.50. And currently, here we are at, 8:30 p.m., and the, you know, so like it's like 2 hours after the Pro Tour ended, Wiltleaf Lieges' price has gone up to $29.50 on the mid.
Yeah, and I bought my Voices of Resurgence after the banning, because I figured they'd be down. I got
they went up.
And now they're at 20. So, yeah. Making the monies.
Yeah, I guess everyone just wants to build the Jacob Wilson deck. I mean, I'm all about that because, like, it's a good-looking deck. Wow, those Wiltleaf Lieges, I bought two a long time ago because they were a package deal on eBay so I could get them for, like, a commander deck. But at that price, I'm not going to be able to build that frame.
Finish out the playset. Well, I just used some Doran the Siege deck.
It doesn't run the full four, and I think two is the correct number.
I thought that it ran the full four of the Wiltleaf Lieges, but only three Loxodon Smiters.
I could have swore he only ran three, but maybe I'm wrong. I know it ran the full four Rhinos, and I thought there's no way they could run eight four drops. But I think two is the correct number just because Liliana is so much more overrepresented on the Pro Tour stage, but not so much as in your local shops. Like, you'll definitely see less Lilianas running around, so.
That's true. In our local shop, definitely. There are, like, you know, the small group of, like, ultra spiky players who, like, I don't know where their money comes from. They probably pull it out of an ass or something. And, there's a guy the other day I saw who either traded or bought into. He has a full page of Lilianas right. In his trade binding.
Yeah, okay.
And a foil one right in the middle.
Dude, no, I got it. It was just, they don't pull the money out of their ass. They pull it out of an ass.
So that's how you earn it.
The indefinite article there is really what's throwing me. It's like, yeah, you gotta go get it out of, the cash ass. That one. One of those.
Yeah, Mr. Somewhere. Moneybags. You go, you give him a fist and he'll give you some cash.
Just, right.
You gotta go in for it.
This is a segue into fisting cuffs, isn't it?
I don't think our listeners want to hear about the ultimate fighting format.
No, they don't. I'm sure of it.
Man, now so that everyone's not like, you know, sending emails saying they want to know about fisting. I'm not gonna explain it unless we get like 20 emails saying what's fisting cuffs.
Dude, like this for an explanation, comment if, Jesus loves you. I don't know. Go on.
I was saying is just like, you know, Green White Hate Bears for some reason has a special place in my heart. I think it's because I came back to the game during, Gate Crash. You know, Selesnya had already had its time in the sun, but, I still got to discover Selesnya. And, it's really where my heart sets now is that the green white beat down. It's just like, when I came back to the game a little more wiser about who I was as a Magic player, that's the kind of deck I just wanted to play. You guys have anything you want to say?
I'm pretty much, closed up on the Pro Tour right now.
Yeah, I think I've said my piece.
Word.
Okay. Well, what do we want to move on to? Chad, you got the schedule there.
Right. What I have, and you guys may call to if you want to talk about any of these things at all, is, let's see, you told me to look up some tech for tiny leaders. Obviously, Perry does not want to talk about tiny leaders. I only had one thought.
Perry, can you talk about tiny leaders?
Yeah.
You sound pained. Is that genuine?
I don't know.
I don't really want to make like a big thing out of it, really. You just told me to look some stuff up, so.
I want to make a huge thing out of it now. I want to dig deep all psychologist-like and, find out what's causing Perry to not like tiny leaders.
Oh, I mean, I didn't mean that I didn't want to make a big thing out of Perry not liking tiny leaders. In fact, I actively want to make a big thing out of, that time that we brought up Gurmag Angler, by talking about it some more at some point, but, I didn't want to make a big thing out of a tiny leaders discussion this week.
Okay. Tiny leaders, I only have one card to kind of mention for like some tech that I thought was kind of cool, and it falls in with the, the whole smother abrupt decay crowd, and it is, Unearth. It is a single black for a sorcery. Choose target creature in your graveyard with a total casting cost 3 or less. So essentially CMC 3 or less, and put that creature into play. Also, it cycles for 2. So it's a win-win on that card on Earth.
Oh, yeah.
Any creature in your graveyard, put it back into play for 1 black mana. If you find that you have no creatures in your graveyard and you need a card stat, pay 2 mana to get a new one.
Is that a sorcery? Is it?
Yeah, okay. Yes, it is.
They're way too good as an instant. Yeah, that's not bad. My thoughts were the suspend cards that have no casting cost. All of them could be played, theoretically, because their CMC is not their suspend cost. Is this the list?
Yeah.
Oh, word.
I see so much green and white. It's gorgeous. I need to get some more seed rhinos. I've only got one right now.
I also have one. As long as they're standing around like $3 or $4, though, I'm not like in a hurry.
Well, I think you probably should be now that they're not printing them anymore.
That's a good point. I should be in more of a hurry. So, what are your thoughts on running, Path to Exile? I know it's like your least favorite card.
Yeah, I don't get that. I think it's like one of the best cards there is.
Are you kidding me, man?
It's almost directly parallel to Swords to Plowshares.
Yeah, except that life means jack shit and letting your opponent play a Siege Rhino one turn before you do is absolute garbage.
I guess if you're looking at the format as everyone's playing Abzan, yeah. But being able for a single mana to permanently get rid of a creature, like, I'm also thinking about, like, you know, Kitchen Finks, and even when it comes down to, like, Strangroot Geist and some other creatures that replace themselves when they come back, especially when it comes to Voice of Resurgence. Handling these creatures with the drawback of, you ramp your opponent, but you permanently get rid of a threat.
There are very few creatures that justify that.
There are, you know. It's not great, but there are also some other creatures out there that care about, creatures in the graveyard. Reanimator's not a thing, and, you know, it may not be for a while, but I just think that exiling is a much more powerful effect than simply destroying. And there's a slight drawback, but for 1 mana, like, there's, like, if we were to look at removal spells for a single mana, I don't think that I could name one that's better than Path to Exile.
Well, Swords of Plowshares.
Okay, well, let's center this into modern.
I think Lightning Bolt is generally better. Especially, if we're thinking about context where you absolutely need to kill something for 1 mana on turns 1 through 3, then Lightning Bolt kills pretty much everything in an efficient manner without ramping your opponent so far ahead that they can start playing 2 spells a turn or dropping their big threats.
I think that's going to change a lot, especially with Splintered Twin taking first in this Pro Tour. Because now everyone, like, there's a lot of people who are going to be new to Modern and or looking for a Modern deck post-ban, and they were looking to this Pro Tour for a solution, and Splintered Twin coming out on top gives them the idea that they should gravitate towards that. When you have 4 Deceiver Exarchs in the deck, a Lightning Bolt becomes less powerful in that context. The Siege Rhinos are still going to be around. And, a Lightning Bolt is one of the best removal spells because in Modern there are so many, the power and toughness is like greatly reduced by like, you know, your expected mana and like how fast you react. But when we're looking at like, you know, a lot of Splinter Twin coming into the format, we're looking at some Siege Rhinos, we're, you know, just looking at some other problematic characters. I get that Lightning Bolt becomes much better because you can aim it at your opponent. But when it comes to just flat out solving a problem, I look to Path to Exile as like the cheapest way to do that. And like, there's not any other really good flat out, I just exile your creature that's not an enchantment that you can get access to. And when you just want to get rid of a creature, I don't know. I don't know anything better than Path to Exile.
Well, it depends on what kind of creature you're talking about, obviously. like, Path to Exile is fine once you reach a certain point in the game, because the difference between having 6 lands and 7 lands is not great, but just giving your opponent, like, a land early in the game like that, it can be pretty backbreaking.
Yeah, I'm not speaking ill of Lightning Bolt, and if I could, I would run some of the decks I try to run, I do run both in the same deck, Lightning Bolt and Path to Exile, and, you know, I will snub a Lightning Helix in favor of running both easily. But, for one mana, like, you know, completely take care of a threat, I know that I'm being redundant, it is just such a powerful thing that I don't know how we can snub it so easily, even for the ramp cost you're giving your opponent. Unless they're going to play something that just puts you in that much of a worse position the very next turn for that one extra mana, and then I don't know what the issue is. There's only been one time that I have never had the experience where it's turned back on me that poorly, and it was me playing against someone else. I was playing black-white tokens. They used Path to Exile on one of my tokens that was coming in to hit them. I ramped on third turn and got that extra mana, and then on turn 3 I got to actually play Hero of Bladehold. And that's like the only time I've ever seen anything negative happen with Path to Exile.
Well, just some context for why I don't particularly like. It's when you play, like, cards like Remand and Mana Leak in the same deck, having Path to Exile as your main removal spell just accelerates them past the point where your counter magic actually matters. And that's the main context. I think it's a lot better in decks like this, which is why obviously I'm not forsaking it. I have 3 total online, and I'd probably have a 4th if I, you know, decide to actually give a shit. But I think it's a lot better in decks like this. Obviously, there's a real cost that shouldn't be ignored. I think people overrate it a little bit. It's a good card, but it's a little overrated. There are definitely some times where you don't notice that it hurts you, but it does have an impact on the game. So I totally get it. It gets rid of pretty much everything. It's only really blank against, like, boggles and decks that don't run creatures. But at the same time, there is a real cost that a lot of people ignore and don't understand. And I think it's valid to at least put that out there. You know, me just shitting on it is just me having fun and making jokes and stuff.
Okay, I genuinely thought that it was a genuine thing where you thought it was like a terrible removal spell.
No, it's a good removal spell.
I think that the drawback is real, especially within using it within the first 3 turns of the game. But I never want to support it as your only source of removal. I think that removal is too important to invest everything into just 4 cards in your entire deck. I think you should be going above and beyond that. And that Path to Exile is just a very good form of removal when you know you need to remove something. Which I was also thinking about from our last podcast, our Namagoyf, talk. What do you think? Like, okay, so for the people who haven't heard our last podcast, we had talked about a card that would take care of Namagoyf for, like, say, a black and this is the card look up. It's like Namagoyf, like nom nom Namagoyf. It's a black and a colorless for a 2/3, and it has the ability that if it destroys target Namagoyf, it gets a +1/+1 counter on it. What do you guys think that if we change this card to, say, target Lurgoyf, we get a +1/+1 counter on it? It's a little more expansive, but also if you're running Namagoyfs in your deck and they're running Namagoyfs in their deck, these could continuously feed on each other to just kind of like one up one another.
Well, that sounds like the best thing ever, actually.
Yeah, I think it sounds complex and kind of interesting. Perry, you have any thoughts on like that back and forth, like where you eat a Namagoyf? Cause like I feel like saying target Namagoyf, they would never ever print that card, but if you said like target Lurgoyf or something equivalent to that, then maybe you would get away with it.
keep in mind, this is really important. We're going to submit this to Wizards later.
I don't know. It's pretty clearly designed to stop one thing and one thing only, but it could be an interesting little sub-game of who's got the last Nomagoyf.
That's true. And one thing I was thinking about in the same respect is that because if you put Lurgoyf on there to make it make more sense, because like when they printed cards to counteract Lingering Souls and Delver of Secrets, they never put the card name on there. Like they just, like they printed Hellkite Tyrant or, no, it wasn't Hellkite Tyrant. What was the, Hellkite that just like killed Lingering Souls? That was his job.
Oh, Thundermaw.
Thundermaw Hellkite, yeah.
Thundermaw Hellkite is my favorite card ever. I wish I had owned one.
And they really rein in the Delver Reign of Terror in the last set. They printed Skybind Lasher, I think it was.
No, it's just Skylasher.
Skylasher, okay. Yeah. But, you know, never said the actual card's name, so maybe if you just had a creature to destroy target Lurgoyf, and say maybe it was a human trapper, and you just gave it some other name.
Oh, it would be, Hans. Obviously. A legendary creature, Hans, like one in a green.
Wait, isn't Hans the one who gets killed by Lurgoyf? Or the, Tomgoyf?
It's Safi Eric's daughter gets killed by Lurgoyf. Cause the flavor text is, Hans run, it's the Lurgoyf.
Oh, well, wouldn't Safi Eric's daughter be the one who survived because she was the one who noticed it first?
Well, they made a-
And she is also a living commander prospect.
Yeah, she is a lot, I mean, she is a card, but I believe her card mechanic requires you to, like, sacrifice her.
If you save a creature? Okay, so Hans is looking for revenge. That's the flavor of this card?
Yeah, I like that. It's Hans.
Hans, Hunter of Goyfs.
Yeah, sacrifice Saphir Exotic when it's put into a graveyard from the battlefield this turn, return that card to the battlefield. Sorry, when target creature. So yeah, she sacrifices herself to save somebody else.
Oh, if we need the card Hans, though, then it sounds like a legendary creature, and this definitely doesn't need to be legendary.
I think it should be, just so that Hans can have a card.
Ah, man, that's so rough, because then you're like, I want to kill all the Tomgoyfs I see, but I really don't want to run more than two of this legendary creature.
Well, that's the trade-off. Also, you could use it as a commander. Hans.
Worst commander ever.
Oh, man, I don't know. They're still Dramaka the Eternal.
Now, one thing I would like to ask you is, I know Perry's gone, but I'd still like to get your opinion on this. We got this modern Pro Tour because the community, like, reached out and said that they're not going to put up with, you know, not being a modern Pro Tour. And that's before we knew that we were going to be getting a whole new block, what's considered a block, every, you know, 6 months.
Right.
When's the next time you think we're going to see a modern Pro Tour now that we know that there's going to be new standard and really effective standard, like, every 6 months?
Mm-hmm. I would say, like, almost definitely not for another year. Like, at least a year before
well, once
we do
a year is what we. Well, once a year is what we've already had it at, though.
Right.
You think it's going to be longer than that? Because they, from what it looks like to me, when they put out that announcement about what the next year's schedule is going to look like, it was all four Pro Tours were standard. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's a chance that they're just going to go ahead and do standard?
Modern. Like, yeah. They just do standard for like three consecutive years. I mean, I think there's going to be a desire to do, like, more standard Pro Tours, like, straight up. Because, like, the Pro Tour, generally speaking, is when, like, a lot of the major archetypes of, like, a standard season get developed. Or at least when they, like, start out. People, like, kind of see what works and what doesn't. And, I think that with the new block structure, people are gonna want to, like, at least independently, like, Wizards is going to want to, see how it's affecting, like, standard play more so than, like, modern or any other Eternal format play. Like, so I think it makes sense, that they'd like to get some, like, it's sort of like feedback, I guess, with the new structure to see if it's like too limiting a card pool or if there's too much change in between, which I doubt will be an issue, but I think they probably want to get some like testing in.
Yeah, I can see that. Like, so you think like maybe every, say block and a half, we'll get a modern Pro Tour, maybe like every 18 months.
That's possible. Yeah, like, was that, is that on rotations?
Yeah, like yeah. There would be, I think we're gonna start like rotating instead of every 24, we're gonna rotate every 18. So yeah, like it'd be, I don't know. I really don't know what to expect for this because far as I know, this is our grand hurrah or farewell to modern Pro Tours. They've not told us anything about what to expect for the future. You know, everyone likes to refer to modern as like kind of like their baby. They are putting out modern masters to try to encourage it and everything. But the Pro Tours where people really look towards, the face of, you know, what modern is going to look like and what they should be running. And, without that being present and put out there, I don't know what they're going to do in the future. So, I mean, like, yeah, there's going to be some GPs. Maybe they add a couple extra modern GPs per year and everything. And that's really nice and cute and everything. But when you don't let your pros be the face of your baby, what are you expecting out of it?
Well, I think, when they say that modern is their baby, they really mean that in two ways. One way is that they are giving it a lot of special treatment. In as much as like they pay a lot of attention to the format, they've been releasing products specifically for it. But also in the fact that it is new, like it is a pretty new format to like the Magic, like I don't know, frontier, like the established formats. It is by far the newest one, and so all of this extra like the content they're like the product they're putting out for it. All of like the attention they're giving it, is really just trying to form how the format like exists, you know? Like, it's trying to cull it into what they want, especially in the upcoming years where there's gonna be a significant change in the amount of product produced.
Yeah, it should be overall more potent, what they're putting into the format since these sets will be once it's shorter, but I'm just saying, like, will they continue caring for it? What kind of support will they be giving it? And with it not being on the grand stage except for potentially Worlds once a year, why will anyone continue to care about it except for, like, those people who really do like Modern? A lot of people have come to like Modern, and it's been growing over the years, so, like, I just kind of, like, wonder where the decision will lie in the future to embrace the modern Pro Tour again.
Well, I mean, having a Pro Tour be a format is not really that, like, huge deal in terms of, like, the main player base. Like, because, like, we'll, you know, sit down and watch a Pro Tour and, like, there'll be, you know, discussion on, like, what decks people are taking and whatnot. But these same people, like, the same pros, are writing articles and, going to GPs and opens, bringing, like, that are, you know, that often have modern as well. I believe what SCG Opens just started doing, like, a permanent modern second day.
Yeah, but they're not covering them, and they're not covering Legacy anymore either.
Right.
Like, there's, like, two or three of those that they'll do per year where they cover those events.
Yeah. Well, yeah, like Players Championships and stuff, but they, but I mean, either way, like, the format's growing, more people are playing it, and, you know, it's receiving the same amount of coverage from, like, like, the people who actually look for it.
Well, that's the thing, is, like, the whole idea is to bring people who wouldn't normally look for it into the fold and have them get interested in this as well, have a place for their old cards to be used in, have a new format for the people to play in. And the way you do that is by putting it on the highest stage possible. When they take it off the highest stage possible, it loses visibility. When you lose visibility, less people know about it, less people care about it. And all, I have to ask the question is whether this is just kind of like the support selling cards and, you know, because they don't really make money off modern cards. Like, those are all secondary market items that people were buying. So is it just a push to sell more cards in standard?
Oh, like actually getting, you're like putting standard back as the primary Pro Tour format?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you could probably say that. I don't think it would be an unfair assessment. The idea of like, I don't know, standard changes a lot more, and, you know, you see four Pro Tours a year? How many Pro Tours are there?
Four now.
Four? Yeah, okay. Yeah, so there are four Pro Tours a year. Standard changes all the time. Standard's where they're making their most money. The people who watch a Pro Tour but don't watch any other Magic coverage are more than likely people who are going to be playing Standard anyway. You know?
Yeah, and that was my question, is like, is that a major motivator for them to cut out a modern Pro Tour, is to sell more of their current product?
I don't want to put it in the way that it's like a conspiracy. Like, I think that it's pretty openly like a way to sell more product. It's like a large advertisement. And in addition to that, like, I think it's also just like a good...
Okay, so do we think that Modern will fall like a little bit more towards the wayside now that they're not going to be covering it as a Pro Tour format? Or do we think we're, you know, you may be seeing it a little more, bit more commonly?
A lot of people see Magic as Magic. It's like, it's one card game with 15,000 pieces, and they don't really go format to format. And what they do know, generally speaking, is Standard, because that's what's played at, like, their local shops. So, now more people will be aware of Modern, but I don't feel it's gonna change the overall, like, outlook on the format much.
Well, I feel like that's, if we go 3 years without a Modern Pro Tour, I feel like that will very much change.
Meh.
You don't think so? If Modern wasn't on the Pro Tour for 36 months, you don't think it would fall by the wayside and people would begin to question the validity of the format, except for maybe like four PPTQs and, you know, four Grand Prix a year?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. We get, like, the Grand Prix, we get the PTQs, we also get open events and third-party events, often hosting Modern. To a lot of people, it doesn't really make that much of a difference who's hosting one event. It's kind of just like it's a Modern tournament, I'm going to go to that, like, grind out some points or whatever.
Yeah, but if you don't put it on the largest stage with the most important people playing it, I think that it loses a lot of its importance.
I don't know. I mean, I just disagree, generally.
I mean, I'll still love it, even if the pros aren't playing it, but still, it's a great joy to me to watch the pros play a format that I enjoy. I mean, I guess in that same respect that Commander's not going anywhere, even though the pros aren't playing it. But I think that Modern is... It's built on spiky competitiveness.
Right.
And watching the pros do the EDH, like, Pro Tour would be, like, a miserable, miserable event.
Oh, I'd watch the crap out of that.
I'd watch the hell out of it, too. But, like, anyone who tried to build those pro decks, I'd have to be like, you're not allowed in my playgroup, man.
LSV can't come around here with his
Shroom deck? Right? That's right.
Man, I don't know. I mean, look at Legacy. Like, you can't quite put them in the same thing, but like, you know, like Wizards basically doesn't even acknowledge the existence of Legacy to a larger extent.
They have two GPs a year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Right. And I mean, Modern is designed to be a little bit more visible than that, and Standard is designed to be the most visible. So I think that they're just sort of playing with the ratios on that.
Well, moving on from talking about, like, Modern, Wizards, future support of it, what do you think about the announcement of Magic Origins for this summer?
You mean Magic, oh god, what's happening? Like, I get that it's, like, the last core set, and they want to do something, like, cool with it. Man, I don't know. Like, I already have, like, okay, you were quite outspoken on not liking Planeswalkers generally.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm pretty outspoken on not caring about, like, the Planeswalker, like, mythos. Like, I've got a little bit of story in me, but I play the game for the mechanics, and that's really, like, the primary thing. Everything, like, all the promotional art they've put out is so stupid.
Well, there's only been two pieces of it so far, and it's both Liliana pictures, and they look badass.
Oh, that means that you have not seen the Jace picture yet.
Oh, the, like, three-dimensional Jace? I figured that was just some mock-up someone put together.
No, that is actually done by the artist that drew the Living Guild Pact Jace, the one from M15, I believe. Yeah, M15.
Okay.
And he looks like, well, first of all, the background image of Jace as a planeswalker is just Jace. That's fine. We know he looks dumb. That's cool. He looks like Link in the foreground, like Link from The Legend of Zelda, but then he has the face of, like, someone who would star in a direct-to-DVD children's adventure movie.
I agree entirely. That's like when I saw this art, like, for the first time, I just looked it up now and it is on the Wizards website.
Yep.
But the first time I saw it, was just like on some Google search, and I was just like, oh, surely this is someone's fan art, because this is embarrassing. This looks like they're making a direct plea to get a hold of, like, the Yu-Gi-Oh crowd. Did you watch Star Wars The Clone Wars? Then you're gonna love Magic the Gathering Origins.
Well, okay, I'm also gonna go ahead and call you out briefly on, stating that there are two pictures of Liliana that look badass. Because there's one picture of Liliana that looks badass, and one picture of Liliana that looks like, she's walking down some stairs.
It looks like a dating sim picture.
There's some, like, crows, so there's a little bit of, like, ominous things to it.
I honestly think that I will put one of these pictures on a playmat. Would you care to gather a response on which one you think it is?
Is it the one with the crows?
Yes, it is the green-white Liliana, the healer.
Right.
That is a gorgeous, like, almost like a anime intro, like, here I am as a beautiful lady,
right,
kind of picture.
Music on the background, like, I don't know.
Yeah, that's right. She's running down to meet her father or something, and then I'm sure the storyline will be he's been brutally murdered, and she got cursed by, like, a magic man.
It's the magic man from Adventure Time.
Yeah, he comes out of the walls and be like, ah, you're going to be evil from now on. Poof.
I thought my understanding of it was that she, like, sold her soul for eternal beauty or some nonsense.
Oh, I don't know. I'm sure we'll learn in this summer. In, Magic Origins.
Yeah. Ugh. They better do something, like, really good with this. Or...
Dude, you've seen the pictures of Jason. That is what all the magic planeswalkers are going to become, is these caricatures.
Well, I mean, like, I hope they do something good mechanically with this set. Like, reprint Tarmogoyf or something.
Well, they said that, well, the guy said, like, during the announcement of Magic Origins, the new, what's going to be the final core set.
Right.
They said that there's going to be two new mechanics, and all the mechanics for the set are going to tie into telling the story of the Planeswalkers, and he also said that he's never felt that they were done so smoothly before. So that means that probably about three or four mechanics that are coming back are going to be old mechanics, and some of them are going to tell the stories. Now, one thing I have to point out is just how offended I am that they took out a Johnny and put in Gideon. Nobody cares about Gideon.
Yeah.
Like, Johnny's the only planeswalker I ever started to give a care about, because he was a cat person. He was different from all the rest, and now they're like, oh, well, we need to make them more humanoid, like, more humanoid for people to care about them. That's apparently what the research has said, is that when they aren't, like, you know, humans, or very close to humans, the people just don't care about them as much, and I believe that's wholeheartedly why they wrote out Johnny, even though he was a badass.
Johnny sucks. Though, to be fair, Gideon sucks too. Anyway, My only reasoning for not liking Ujane is that I have a long history of not liking cat people. It started with the Elder Scrolls and just spiraled out of control from there.
Oh, man, you don't like Jizaru?
No. Well, Jizaru, no, he sucks.
Oh, man, he made me change my mind about some cat people. Like, all the planeswalkers I have, like, actually related to and kind of liked in the least bit,
right?
They are killing off and getting rid of. They did it to Ajani, they did it to Elspeth, they did it to Venzer, and they did it to Garrick.
Oh, man. Yeah, I'd say, you almost named all white planeswalkers. I like Garrick, enough. I don't know. In terms of, like, my, like, enjoyment of a planeswalker is largely going to be based on, like, consistent card quality.
I think all planeswalker cards are bullshit and shouldn't exist in the first place.
Right.
So, really, lore and flavor is the way I enjoy them. So I need, like, I'll look at the cards and think, oh, that's cool or not, but, like, for the most part, I want them to be destroyed.
Yeah, my absolute favorite planeswalker, I guess if we're talking about just planeswalkers, my favorite of all time then would have to be, Sarkhan, but only because of Sarkhan the Mad, which is the best planeswalker ever printed.
All negatives?
Yeah, the one that's all negatives.
I can see that. Yeah, that's actually a fun exercise. Yeah.
I'm also a big Nicol Bolas fan, but he only has one card as a planeswalker, so I can't give him my favorite planeswalker. He is my favorite legendary creature, though, because he's just reading a book.
But in any case, Gideon is... They're going to focus on Gideon now. They're just going to pretend that Johnny didn't exist is what I'm guessing is going to happen.
Well, he did die, didn't he?
No, he didn't.
I thought he died in Theros.
No, Elspeth died, and Ajani went around to the temples speaking against Heliod in blind defiance of the gods to let them people know that the only reason the gods really exist is because they put their faith and power into them. And Heliod got pissed about that, but no, Ajani's alive.
Oh, Heliod didn't kill him too?
Nope. No, he told him to get the fuck out of his temple, but he didn't kill him.
Okay. Well, I just got schooled, I guess. I was under the impression that Ajani was dead.
No, Johnny's too much of a badass to die.
Right? Dude, Jizal Goldman is a badass.
Someone else we've never seen. I want more cat people.
Yeah.
You can even give me some hound people. I'll take those. The number one thing I'd love
Aven.
Is, Aven Planeswalker. Give me some of those.
Yeah, Aven Planeswalker. I think that Aven Brigadier could be elevated.
Absolutely. That guy looks like a planeswalker to me.
He really does.
He looks like a badass who would tear out some throats and, you know, go to a different dimension and do that.
Yeah. Yeah, plus one, get an emblem, all birds and all soldiers you control get +1/+1. Yeah. Plus two, put a 1/1 bird soldier creature token with flying into play. Plus nine. He doesn't have an ultimate, just pluses.
He just can never get him off the field through attacking.
Right.
That would be a really exciting planeswalker if it was all pluses.
Yeah, it'd be really difficult to, it's just like be thwarted by a dread boar.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Which is what, like, since they only have two spells in the entirety of magic that can just destroy a planeswalker.
Right.
Well, I guess other ones would just say destroy target permanent.
Right.
But, like, that would be really fun if it was just like a planeswalker. It was just like, you know, +3, gain 2 life, +2, and then it had like a better thing, and then it's like plus, you know, they're +0 is something actually halfway decent.
Right.
But like, it was just like 0, a +2, and a, you know, that's what I really, yeah, that'd be an exciting planeswalker that I could get behind, because like, it would just be basically an enchantment that would, through enough effort, you could get rid of.
Right.
Without having to have a destroy enchantment spell.
It just couldn't do anything like really wall-y. Like, you couldn't, it couldn't just stall the game, because that would be sort of like, unfair. It would just like, provide like a one card answer to an entire army.
Here's the Aven one. It's gonna be, a white and two colorless. It's 0 if, it comes into play of like, let's say, 3 loyalty.
Sure.
It's zero is creatures can't attack you unless their controller plays two for each creature.
Right.
And then, you know, it's plus one would be something like give a creature plus one and flying, and it's plus two would be like gain a life.
Yeah, oh man, plays it. Isn't there an Ajani that already is like plus one, gain two life or some bullshit?
I don't know, man. Like I said, I don't keep track of the actual Planeswalker cards too much.
I think
like the characters.
I think that's Ajani Goldman, like the original Lorwyn Ajani. But yeah, whatever.
And then them getting rid of Garrick, I'm also kind of disappointed in. Like, he was a real badass, and then they just abandoned him. They made him go evil, and they took this real long, hard line to write him out of the story.
Is he just gone, like, straight up? Like,
Dude, I haven't been reading those stories enough. He's just...
Well, I mean, like, are they not using him in this set, is my...
No, it's gonna be Nissa.
Oh, it's gonna be Nissa?
Yeah.
Dude, we're like, fucking, who cares?
Exactly.
yeah, that's pretty lame, all things considered. I don't know. Obviously, I don't wanna, like, try and speculate on the set. I'm just, if Wizards is listening, which I'm sure they are, don't let me down. This is your chance to do a last of something.
Wizards, if you're listening, you've already let me down. I want you to know that. I want you to feel shame. Yeah, well, I actually want that to come across as really genuine because I'm really ashamed of them. Getting rid of a Johnny. What's that about? Killing off my white planeswalkers. You guys are trying to chase me out of this game. Okay, so we've talked a lot about Pro Tour, some of our ideas about Magic, this being the last announced modern Pro Tour has meant, and, you know, just some stuff about the origins of the Planeswalkers that they've announced will be involved with our summer set, coming up in July. We have anything else we want to touch on?
I think we're good for this one. Probably have some stuff for the next time.
Okay, join in next time, when... I don't know, Chad will give Jace a reach around.
Right. And just get it all down my throat.
What? Well, that's an impressive arc, if it's a reach around. It's going up over top of Jace's head and coming back down. Then you're gonna catch it in your mouth?
I used the wrong pronoun, I meant to say him.
That is some Circus Olay shit there.
Oh yeah, I mean, a Circus Olay? The Mexican circus?
Yes.
Okay.
Dude, they never do that stuff in France. Oh, wait. Okay, but if you want to join us again, check us out. You can drop us a line at pillarfieldtalks@gmail.com. You can tweet us at pillarfieldtalk, that's without the S, at Twitter. And you can always catch up on back episodes that we're not posting on mtgcast.com. You can catch up with those episodes at our website, pillarfieldtalks.com. And you have a great night.
Tweet us up.
That's your line. I don't say tweet us up.
Okay, that's fine. Tweet us up.
I thought that's your whole thing. Do it again.
So tweet us up. Tweet one more time. Tweet us up.
Okay, for safety again.
speed us up.